All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from the Borough of Queens in New York City. It is the 10th day of January, 2023. And I want to thank each of you for listening to this show, and also for those of you who are not on our current mailing list, I want to invite you to send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions4taylor@gmail.com, to request inclusion on our email list so that you can remain informed of our weekly topics and guests for upcoming podcasts that we plan to post at 3 o'clock p.m. New York time every Wednesday starting on January 25th. Yes, while we have been going live on air for over the past 13 years and 9 months on Voice America Business Channel, starting on Wednesday, January 25th, you will need to go to my website at jtaylormedia.com or to my YouTube channel, Jay Taylor Media, to listen to future guest interviews that are done on Turning Hard Times into Good Times. While we are on the topic of the changes that we are making, I have to admit that it does sadden me to leave the Voice America Business Channel, and I have to say I have been remiss in not giving credit to two people who have been amazing friends over the years. First, I want to thank my producer, Tacy Trump, who is responsible for this show being invented. Actually, Tacy contacted me nearly 14 years ago to invite me to do my own show. It has been a lot of fun, so much fun, in fact, that at my age 75, I feel the need to continue doing pretty much the same thing for the foreseeable future, though with a little less structure than at Voice America. So I do want to say a great big thanks to Tacy for getting me this gig over the last nearly 14 years. The other person who has been so important in making this show happen and run smoothly is my engineer, Matt Widener. Matt has been an amazing calming factor. When on a few occasions over the years, guests have not shown up for one reason or another, or there were technical difficulties, Matt has not only been calm, cool, and collected when the unexpected has taken place, but I could always count on him having pre-recorded interviews ready to go for the show. Exactly when that was needed, when they were needed to be available, they were always there. So it is with considerable sadness that I will be saying goodbye, at least professionally, to both Matt and Tacy. I wish them both the very best into an infinite future. So over time, circumstances, friends, and acquaintances do change. Given my age and the fact that my wife and I are grandparents for the first time, we do want to have a bit more time with family and some more leisurely moments in life before the good Lord calls us home from the trials and tribulations of this earthly existence. But I do expect, at least for the foreseeable future, to continue interviewing many of the same guests that I have interviewed on this show, including but not limited to people like Michael Oliver. I expect Michael will be with me every other week, as he has been. Alistair McLeod, Bob Moriarty, David Stockman, John Rubino, Daniel Lycaie, Lynn Alden, and Chen Lin, to name just a few. The show won't be interrupted with commercials in the future, but I will be interviewing CEOs of some of my favorite junior gold and silver mining companies that will be sponsors to this new endeavor. Keep in mind that companies that are sponsors on this show have really been those that I have personally invested in and have also covered in the newsletter, with rare exceptions. And they are companies that I have chosen because I believed in the potential into the future. They are high risk, high reward type investments, and investors should be aware of that. And we try to make people aware of that in our discussions with the companies when we talk to them on this show. And of course, in my newsletter, you can, of course, keep up with all of the companies that are listed that are sponsors of this show and many more beyond that if you subscribe to Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks at miningstocks.com. With turning hard times into good times, moving into this different format, the list of current sponsors had dwindled down to just one for today, and that sponsor is Timberline Resources. So thanks to Timberline for making this show possible today. In just a few minutes after the first commercial break, I will be speaking with Patrick Highsmith, the president and CEO of Timberline, for an update on that company's very promising Carlin-style gold discovery in Nevada and a very exciting silver-rich carbonate replacement system as well. Both of those are located along the same trend and just to the south of the very exciting I-80 Gold Corp's Ruby Hill project. And so those are in Nevada projects that are very exciting, and I think that we might hear something from Patrick in just a few minutes from now in terms of what sort of catalysts might make this investment rewarding for people in 2023. Timberline is a company that I own and has been true with most sponsors in the show. Timberline is a recommendation in my newsletter with gold and silver, looking really very, very positive right now as we start this new year. I hope you will consider subscribing to my newsletter, Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. I'm really excited about this year and the potential for gold and silver investments. I've titled today's show, Gold Shares and Other Bargains. Kevin Duffy and Patrick Highsmith are my guests today. It seems likely that gold and silver miners should have a great year in 2023, given that both metals appear to be in the early stages of a new bull market, even as stocks are headed much, much lower, at least in my view, and I think that's what you'll hear from Kevin Duffy as well. It is also possible, if central banks are unable to tame the inflation, that interest rates may still be heading much higher. Well, I hope that's not the case, but that could very well be the case in my view. As we head into the recession, the odds strongly favor declining earnings, which along with higher interest rates are sure to compress price earnings ratios. That's usually what happens anyway. I believe the pain from overvalued stocks and bonds is just now getting started. The overvaluations were caused because of virtually free money generated by central banks, and they are all indoctrinated on a religion named Keynesianism. That has worked very well for our ruling elite, who think the wisdom of a few Ivy League PhDs know more than the collective wisdom of millions of free market participants regarding questions such as, well, what should interest rates be? What should the cost of capital be? As if a few really bright people would know more than millions of collective operators in the system. So this is straight out of communist and fascist models, and it has led to massive redistribution of wealth by directing capital into the paper markets away from the mining, manufacturing, and farming activities, which are industries that provide good middle-class jobs and create wealth. Low interest rates manipulated by the Fed has not only led to the poverty of the middle class, but it has also resulted in the highest debt to net worth in American history since World War II. Because of the manipulation of markets that has led to massive overvaluations of paper assets, stocks, and bonds. There is an opportunity now if you recognize that the pendulum is starting to swing out and back towards in the other direction. The production of real things, it seems to be where we're headed, as opposed to fantasy stocks that can only thrive when money is free, as it has been virtually over the last number of decades. I firmly believe that owning financially strong companies that produce life's necessities like food, energy, and actual money that is in the form of gold will enable investors to turn the tables in their favor. But most people will be too slow in recognizing the turn because they will continue to believe what they hear in the mainstream media, which is used by the elite to perpetuate the status quo. Well, Kevin Duffy is certainly one guest who understands free markets and the carnage that Fed market manipulation has caused. Kevin is an Austrian school economic thinker, and he understands that gold is actual legal money, even if governments claim otherwise. But Kevin is also a realist, and he has learned not to let his understanding of ideal free markets deprive him of profiting in the corrupt, manipulated system that we are forced to thrive in, or to use anyway. So I'm going to really be interested in hearing what Kevin has to say. He did extremely well in the financial crisis of 2008-2009, made tons of money during that time frame, and then he went into a period of time where he he didn't know how to make money in good times. And since Kevin has learned how to do that, he's done extremely well. Since he started writing his coffee can portfolio, over the last two and three quarters years, it has outperformed the S&P dramatically. It's up something like 42% to 19% for the S&P 500. So really, really happy to hear what Kevin has to say in the second half of today's show. But right now we are going to be going to break, but don't go away, because when we come back, Patrick Highsmith will join me to talk about what is being planned this year in the first quarter, in the early parts of this year anyway, by Timberline Resources. And as I say, it's a company that has made a Carlin-style gold discovery. It is a very low cap market stock, and I think it has tremendous potential. So I think you'll want to stick around to hear what Patrick has to say. Don't go away. We'll be right back after the break.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Timberline Resources is a mineral exploration and resource development company focused on gold discovery in the world-class mining jurisdiction of Nevada. The company's flagship Eureka Project hosts a significant gold resource and drill-indicated upside potential at nearby higher-grade targets. Timberline Resources trades in Canada under the symbol TBR and on the OTCQB in the U.S. under the symbol TLRS. To learn more about this district-scale asset with exciting discovery potential, please visit www.timberlineresources.co.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
America is heading over a fiscal cliff. Home prices are still receding and unemployment growing.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy, and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have Patrick Highsmith with me once again. He is the president and CEO of Timberline Resources. It's a mineral exploration resource development company focused on gold and copper discoveries in north central Nevada, USA. I think we might say gold and copper and probably silver and maybe some other metals as well, but the focus has been primarily on gold, I would say. He is also the chairman of Firefox Gold Corp, and he's had a long history, quite a few years, about 3 decades or so of experience in exploration, and he's been with major mining companies as a professional geologist and an executive with companies like Rio Tinto, BHP Billiton, Newmont, Lithium One, Pure Energy Minerals, and Fortescue Metals, a group in Australia. And, he's worked on a whole lot of projects, lots of experience. He is a very talented man, and we're very pleased to have him today. He He does, as I mentioned, he works, he is the chairman of Firefox, but today we're going to talk to him about Timberline, and which is located in Nevada. Their project is located in Nevada's Eureka Gold Belt. The company trades in the U.S. under the symbol TLRS. You can buy it in Canada under the symbol TBR, 159.7 million shares. I traded earlier today at 15.5 cents. Now it's 13 cents. That gives it a market cap around 21 million. It has 508,000 ounces of gold in the measured and indicated category, and another 141,000 in the inferred category. So it is a junior with a resource already, but it has an awful lot more in mind than a mere half a million ounces of gold. And so really happy to have Patrick with us again. Thanks for joining me, Patrick.
Hello, Jay. Good to be with you.
It's always good to have you. And, you know, we've had a couple of years that haven't been all that exciting for gold and silver, but it looks to me like we could be turning the corner. Last time we had you on was November 1. And then just a few days later, you reported some assays from the Waterwell Zone, which is, I know, is a very highly prospective, some really great numbers there, which is down dip from the resource, as I understand it, from that resource I just mentioned. What did you learn from the results of your drilling program in 2022?
You know, Jay, we've just wrapped up the drilling in sort of November and still waiting actually on a few assays. Probably early next week or possibly late this week we'll announce the final holes from that program, Jay. But The takeaway there was that the Waterwell Zone is a significant new discovery. We really believe we're inside the footprint of a discovery that could be a couple of million ounces of gold or more. Now, it's not a resource yet. It is down dip from the resource you mentioned, which comes to surface, by the way. And that's really been the story at the Eureka Project, is we knew we had this oxidized gold at surface. There were significant heap leach production here, as you and I have discussed in the past, dating back to the 1980s. And we went in a couple of years ago with some new institutional investors, kind of revamped the management team a little bit, and we realized that these higher-grade rocks down dip from that resource were really the best place to sort of show the market and the world that this 29-square-mile project has the potential for multi-million-ounce discoveries and that those will come with grade. And so just to sum up the answer to your question, our real takeaway from this year's program is that it's clear that we do have a consistently mineralized system. It's called the Waterwell Zone. It is at a contact between the Dunderberg Shale and the underlying Hamburg Formation. And what keeps happening, Jay, is every time we drill that contact, we hit gold. Early in the year and into the second quarter, we were showing really strong intercepts of over 40 meters of continuously mineralized rock. One of those holes on the north end averaged 44 meters of 4.1 grams gold, with a nice 12-meter run of over 9 grams within that. And then almost half a kilometer south of that, we drilled another hole, reported that a little later, and that was 41 meters of 5.1 grams of gold, which had a 20-meter interval of 9.5 grams, Jay. So we followed up on that. We'll report a couple of more step-out holes as we end up the reporting of this program, perhaps early next week. And then we're turning towards what we expect to be a very, very, very busy 2023 at the Waterwell Zone and at several other targets on the property.
Yeah, I mean, there's the Oswego target, Windfall target, and I guess the resources at Lookout Mountain, is that right?
That's right. The resource itself is over on the west side, as we've been discussing, which is the Lookout Trend, and that's where the Waterwell Zone sits. And then sort of in the middle of the property is a smaller trend, but with some really good new numbers coming out last year, an area called Oswego. We put a couple of more holes in there this year, but we really didn't focus there. And then on the east and northeast side of the property, there's an area that's over 8 kilometers long with drill-indicated gold called the Windfall Zone or the Windfall Trend. And there were three open pits on our claims, Jay, that produced over 115,000 ounces of gold back in the 80s. And we've got a number of good drill-indicated hits around that. And I guess even further north from there, folks will recall that the Eureka District was originally a silver district. Silver, zinc, and lead were discovered there in the early 1860s. And that's what led to its heyday, when it was the second biggest silver producer in America. And then, of course, our neighbor to the north, I-80 Gold Corp, has been reporting some fantastic drill results at their Ruby Hill project for gold. But they've also really made news with very high-grade silver intercepts in a carbonate replacement deposit type system that is hearkening back to those original days of Eureka. And we've got a few silver targets up our sleeves ourselves, Jay, that we intend to hit in 2023.
Yeah. So that silver, did you, I think you've had some silver, you've hit into this carbonate replacement system, some silver values in a drill hole or so, have you, at this stage?
That's right, Jay. A couple of our deeper holes, mostly to just the north and the east from the water well zone where we hit this gold, we've hit long runs of, you know, medium grade silver, but over 200 meters of it in a couple of cases, 200 mm-hmm. meters of 5 to 6 grams silver with lead, zinc, and lower levels of gold. And that's the southernmost discovery that we know of a carbonate replacement type system in the Eureka District. And that's a little deeper. We will be returning to that area. Our mutual friend Quentin Henney keeps telling us we've got to drill some deep holes under that, because that's where I-80 Gold and others have had some success there. So we will return to that area. We call that the Graben Zone there, and the silver associated with it. But there's also some silver that comes to surface, Jay, farther north in the vicinity of an area we call New York Canyon, only a couple of kilometers from I-80 Gold's property. And we've had those claims in the company for a long time now. But there were a few small properties interior to that we are in the works of acquiring that have some silver mineralization that we look forward to be talking about very, very soon. These are small acreage, but they're patented claims, Jay. And as you know, patented claim is effectively private property with both surface and mineral rights. And they've been held for over a generation in private, in some cases, families and private groups. We expect to do some more consolidating and to roll out some exciting silver targets. I think before mid-February, we hope to have some news in that. And that should set up our calendar pretty well, giving us about three areas of focus for 2023.
Now, that's really exciting. So you have, do you have any idea yet what you're going to be doing the first quarter or so? I mean, how will you start the year? What will your exploration program look like?
Yeah, absolutely. We are still crunching data, as I said, so folks will see some new maps and new cross sections coming out next week with this news release that will update us primarily on the water well zone. We've been looking at targets at the windfall trend and expect to be turning out probably a sort of exploration outlook disclosure probably in February, running up to around PDAC time when we'll be talking with folks. We don't expect the drills to come back in first quarter, Jay, but probably with a bit of luck earlier in second quarter than last year. We hope to have drills turning by April, May. So first quarter, it's, processing data, tying up some, hopefully some new acquisitions that are just small property deals that we'll discuss when those are completed, and then planning a drill program to hit and focus on the water well zone, the windfall trend, where we have, again, oxide gold mineralization coming to surface and some good indications of sulfide roots beneath that. And then, as I said, I think there'll be some silver and gold-silver targets on some of these newer targets, which we'll be mentioning during the first quarter disclosures as well.
Yeah, I guess you mentioned patented projects, patented land. That, I guess, means it's probably easier to get permits and to start working on those than it is those unpatented claims.
That's generally true. We hold a very large land position that includes a plan of operations, Jay, which gives us over 250 permitted drill sites, mostly along the lookout trend, which is many kilometers north-south. And that's a big area where we are fully permitted to drill, which is exciting. But you're quite right. At Windfall, where we hold patented claims, and in other areas where we hold patented claims, it is much easier, particularly if access to these properties is good. One doesn't have to go across the federal land with any dozers or anything like that. And that's just the situation at Eureka. We have beautiful road access to our project, and we have patented claims with tremendous access. So it is true that you can move quicker with drilling and that exploration activity, both at our windfall trend area that where we hold patents, and at some of these new targets that we'll be talking about early in the new year.
Well, you certainly do. You said 29 square kilometers?
Miles. Okay. 70 square kilometers.
Yeah. Okay, all right, yeah. And you mentioned the windfall target, of which there's some patented claims there. That I think I heard you say stretches 8 kilometers in length.
That's right. Yeah, it's a big area with those three open pits I mentioned, and then drilling to the south of that and a bit to the north as well. If folks have been following our neighbors at Golden Lake Exploration, they've been doing some drilling right on the property line just north of our windfall trend. So it's a well-established gold trend, and we look forward to getting the drills back there in 2023 for the first time in a number of years.
Crescat Capital is a major shareholder. Are there any other institutions that are in there?
Yes, our biggest shareholder outside the board is Crescat Capital, and they are, I suppose it varies, but they're over a 10% shareholder, maybe 13 or 14% of the companies issued and outstanding. At the board level, we have about 16% of the stock, and then we also have a large fund out of London called the Jupiter Gold and Silver Fund. They manage about $1 billion, and Jupiter owns about 9.9% of Timberline. So a nice, strong institutional base. And we've got a lot of skin in the game ourselves at the board level.
A lot of skin in the game, and some were paging through your presentation, your corporate presentation. It's online. People can go and look at it. I think there's some reference looking sort of targeting something more than 5 million ounces. I guess, you know, you need those kind of numbers these days to make things work. And I guess it seems as though you certainly have a lot to shoot at and some really good starting points there with that Carlin mineralization at the waterfall zone. So I guess we should be watching, I guess, no drill results first quarter, but well, other than those that haven't come in from this drill session. We should be getting some updated drill. We should be getting some drill results from the 2022 program yet, and then later on in the year, I guess.
That's right. The next news release people will see will be the last of our drill results from 2022. And then we'll be making any announcements on any small acquisitions or new targets that have emerged. Those will both come pretty soon. And we'll be at PDAC meeting with folks and sort of planning at that point to begin drilling in hopefully April, May. So a lot of news flow coming in the sort of heart of the field season. And we'll kick that off with a January release of news from drilling late in 2022, which will just be probably early next week.
I'm guessing you'll probably need to raise some capital this year, though, especially if you really hope to do an aggressive program. Crescat, no doubt, will be there, I would imagine. Any comments on that?
Yeah, that's right, Jay. We, you know, the program went extraordinarily well. Not only were we on time with this year's program, we drilled mostly core instead of RC, which is more expensive drilling, but it yields higher quality. But I'm happy to say we shaved about 20% off our drilling costs for both core and RC drilling. Steve Osterberg, our vice president of exploration, delivered the program on time and under budget. And we ended the year with over $1.4 million or something like that in the bank, which is plenty when you're not drilling, as you know. But certainly to hit the kind of program we hope to execute, we will be doing some marketing and looking to raise money appropriately. And you know, all indications are that our big shareholders will be there for us. We've met with all of those folks and kept them informed, the two I mentioned, plus a few others. So, yeah, we're optimistic. And, of course, the macro world of gold price, Jay, as you know, certainly dominates most in our space, you know, non-revenue-generating companies that are out there to go find gold so the big boys can come hopefully mine it, you know, buy it from us or mine it with us. And as a result, you know, you look at last year, we had great results. We traded up strongly in the first quarter on those drill results and into the second quarter. But then, of course, we saw quite a doldrums come in gold price, which hammered us and everybody else back. And so we're attuned to that. The macro climate always sort of overwhelms what we do. But we think a big discovery on this huge property on a major gold trend in Nevada with really exciting news all around us, particularly to our north with I-80 Gold. We think the momentum is with us and the wind will be in our sails, and we've drilled some a great new discovery that we've been reporting on over the last two seasons, mm-hmm. which we think will again set us up well for the future.
Yeah, the water well zone, absolutely. Well, we'll certainly be looking forward to the information that comes forward and the new acquisitions that you're talking about. And certainly if we're right about the direction of the precious metals markets, that will put some wind in your sails. And it won't just be the big guys, the big shareholders, but a lot of other littler people will want to be coming in too. I'm quite certain of that, in the right environment with some great results, which I'm hoping for, and I know you are even more so. Well, thank you very much, Patrick, for joining us again and giving us an update. It is an exciting story, and we'll hope to keep up with you in the future. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jay. Good to be here, as always.
All right. Thank you. All right, folks, don't go away, because Kevin Duffy will be with me right after the break. And Kevin has, you know, he's learned to make money in good times as well as bad times. He first rose into the limelight when he made tons of money in the 2008-2009 stock market crash, the financial market debacle that we all suffered through. And then he had a little trouble making money in good times. He's since learned how to do that too, beating the S&P 500 over the last 3 years very substantially. So Kevin will be back with us right after the break, so don't go away.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
The latest business information is made simple with the Voice America Business Network. The professionals in the business world bring you live talk radio shows featuring an array of business topics, strategies for building wealth, sales and marketing, stock trading, investing, and business technology. Voice America business hosts are professionals in their fields and bring to the airwaves weekly business discussions that offer up-to-date information, advice, and education. The Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business talk.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm really happy to tell you that Kevin Duffy is with me once again. He is the he's had a very good career in the past. He's done extremely well with the Baring Core Fund. It's a contrarian macro-themed hedge fund with a flexible mandate, and they did extremely well during the 2008-2009 financial crisis. He has had a very good career. He had a little trouble making money a few years after the, you know, he I guess he liked the bad times. He made more money in the bad times. But then he said, how am I going to make money when times are good? And he learned how to do that too, which is why I'm really happy to have him here. The coffee can portfolio that Kevin, that is in his newsletter, and I guess he manages it for himself, maybe for some other people too. I'm not sure. He can tell us about that. But he just sent me a note and actually updated the performance so far since the inception of the newsletter, the Coffee Can Portfolio. That goes back January, I think, 2020 sometime. It's up 55.97%. That compares to the S&P during that time. of 20.86%. So those of you, you might want to perk up your ears and listen to what Kevin has to say. If he can do that, if he can beat the S&P by that amount, you might want to pay attention. Very few hedge funds are doing that these days. So, Kevin, thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Jay. Thanks for having me back.
It's really good to have you. Your fund started exactly, I think, February 18th, 2020, I'm reading here.
That's right.
So that 55.97% gain is since that date, February 18th, 2020. At the same time, the S&P has gained 20.86%. Gold is up 15%. CPI up 15%. So gold has kept up slightly ahead of the CPI. Your portfolio has knocked the cover off the ball against gold, against the CPI, and against the S&P 500, and global equities managed a small gain of about 5%. So here's the question, Kevin. We'll start off with this, and I know we have a lot more to talk about, but regarding your performance now, as I said, you did extremely well. I mean, you had like a triple-digit gain in 2008, 2009. And then you had a little trouble figuring out how to make money when times got good. Was there a change in your investment philosophy that allowed you to turn things around and do so well in all market environments? Hopefully you'll do well in this one.
There was a major change. And, the change came from making really a pretty big mistake. And that was sticking with the program that worked so well in the past and really not adapting and changing with the new environment. I think finally, we went through this decade of ZERP, markets just continuing to go up. And essentially, we made money shorting the credit bubble, and we were very skeptical that all of the money that was being poured into the market, easy credit would be successful. And so we, essentially stayed short, and that was a disaster. And so I think it was, it's hard to say exactly when I kind of hit bottom, but I really did. And I realized I needed to kind of just take everything down to the foundation, start over, and figure out what I was doing right, what I was doing wrong. And, so there were a bunch of lessons that I learned from that, and probably rules. And I applied those to really going forward and completely changing my approach.
Mm-hmm. So, well, as I understand it, you believe in the Austrian School of Economics. You still do probably, but the real world doesn't run on Austrian economics. It runs on Keynesian economics. And so was that part of it, was to say, well, I believe there's the ideal, there's the model that I think the way the world should be, but here's the way it really is, and I've got to live in the world as it really is rather than one that I think should be.
I think that's part of it, but I had to be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I felt like the Austrian lens, the non-interventionist lens, was appropriate, and I think the problem, there were several lessons and several problems that I had to deal with. One is that as a short seller, you're really putting yourself in a position to get wiped out. Mm-hmm. And so the first lesson in all this is your number one goal is survival. I mean, mm-hmm. never forget that. That's the number one goal. And so you really have to be thinking about asymmetric bets. This is why venture capitalists do so well. They have a lot of losing bets, but they have one big one that is a monster home run and makes up for all the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a short seller, it works the other way around. If you make one really bad bet, it can wipe you out.
Right.
So I think that was really the first lesson that I had to learn, is that it's okay to be bearish. It's okay to hedge and that sort of thing. But you really have to be very careful about it and have very tight risk controls. I think the other thing is, and this is a danger with Austrian economics, is not to get overly dogmatic, that you have to have balance. You can't just focus on all of the negatives because they're very visible. The negatives from government intervention are visible. Mm-hmm. And it's the things that are not so visible, the things that are hidden, tend to be longer term secular trends that are positive. And so I think that was the second lesson that I took from all this, was you have to have balance in your life. You can't get too overly dogmatic. You have to cross-pollinate, be able to even people that you disagree with, sometimes they're going to be right. And mm-hmm. so you have to have more of an open mind. Mm-hmm. I think that was a big lesson. And then, and part of that is having multiple tools in your toolbox. So when all you're focused on is being a short seller and all the negatives, you know, it's the old idea of when all you have is a hammer, everything is a nail.
Right.
So you lose your objectivity, I think, that mm-hmm. way. You know, you're constantly waiting for the next and praying for the next bear market. And, you know, there's so much more going on than just all the negatives. There are multiple threads playing together into this future that's unfolding. And I think it's just a lot more interesting world and a realistic world than just focusing on all the negatives.
Mm-hmm. I think that served you very well. And I think I probably have learned some of the same lessons to a certain extent. You mentioned venture capitalists. You and I both know Chen Lin, and he certainly thrives on that. It seems everything that I pick up that Chen wants to buy, though, doesn't work out. But he'll have a couple of them that are, you know, 100 baggers or whatever that that get him over the finish. You know, he's done extremely well. So, all right. Well, let's get on to your view of 2023. You sent a note to me. You said we might want to discuss the everything bubble, which phase we're in right now and where we're likely headed. So maybe we'll start with that. I mean, here you are, you're recognizing, as you say, the Austrian school, people that understand it can easily see the problems with government intervention. I think that the Keynesians don't see those problems, or at least they don't want to, maybe they don't want to see them because they're doing just fine with this program. But, where are we now in this everything bubble? You're calling this, is this the bubble, the mother of all bubbles? Is that what you're referring to here? Something really big?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's the greatest bubble that the world has ever seen. I don't think that's really an exaggeration. And, you know, bubbles go through phases, obviously. They go through a long, slow buildup, and then they go through this parabolic rise. And, you know, they go from skepticism to mm-hmm. to optimism to euphoria. And, you know, when you go through that parabolic rise, you're at the euphoria part. And bubbles are collective detachments from reality. That's what mm-hmm. they are. And mm-hmm. You get that euphoric burst at the end of them. And then you get a lot of backward look. You know, all the people that didn't see this happening now are rationalizing why it happened, why it will continue, why it's different this time. And then you get the peak, and you start as things start to roll over. You go into denial, and then that passes through to fear, and then capitulation, and then finally despair, which is basically hitting rock bottom, kind of like what I went through personally. Mm-hmm. Is you hit rock bottom, and you actually change behavior. So I believe that we're probably in somewhere in the denial phase. Maybe in some cases we've reached levels of fear, we're in that, but I don't think that we've gotten into the capitulation phase yet. Mm-hmm. There are you know, just a lot of examples of this. You see cash levels at Schwab and cash levels at Robinhood still have not gone up a whole heck of a lot. You have the government passing $1.7 trillion omnibus spending bills full of pork. You know, they haven't gotten the memo yet that we're in a different world. So I think there's still a lot of denial. You see it in the technology space with companies that have been able to basically burn cash and spend lots of money on R&D and on marketing expense. And, you know, you haven't seen the wholesale cuts yet, but you're starting to get a glimpse of that. You're starting to get the layoffs at the big tech companies. And so, you know, I think we're starting to move into that fear phase. And we've seen, you know, again, trying to get some balance here. It's not all black and white. It's not like, oh, well, we're exactly here.
Yeah.
Different parts of the market. And you had, like, last year, IPOs generated less than $8 billion. That was down 95% from 2021. So there have been some definitely moves in the right direction. You know, we're moving in the right direction. I think that's important to note.
Well, yeah, as I look at the markets right now, actually, Kevin, I mean, we're looking at the Dow. Well, we're looking at NASDAQ. It's up almost 0.75 points. You know, it's, I'm looking at the chart you sent along. There's a return to normal idea that there's a denial. Then there's, you know, like a bull trap. Like people say, oh, well, you know, maybe it's, you know, it's just, I don't really believe this is anything serious, just a tiny correction. Then you go back up and people start to feel like, well, maybe it's over. And then you get the really big drop and then the bottom falls out at some point in time. Yeah, these capitulation things I've seen in the past, and it's when you – if you say – I can remember feeling this way myself. People tell you to go out and buy stocks. They're cheap now. You just saw the blood in the streets, and you're saying, are you kidding me? I'm not going to buy any stocks. Never want to know – I never want to see a stock again. That's when you get capitulation, right? We've seen that in the past. We're nowhere near that. We're nowhere near that right now.
No, I don't think we are, Jay, and I mean – You and I have we experienced the 87 crash. Yep. That was capitulation.
Yeah,
we saw what it was like in 2008. You know, and today, just as an example, the Wilshire 5000 as a percentage of GDP, it got up as high as 200%. We're now at 148%. Well, the peak in 2000, the top of the tech bubble, was 143%. So we're actually higher than that level in 2000. Mm-hmm. So, but I think there's another thing. So we could, there's another lesson here or another rule that I use, coffee can rule number 8, which is it's a market of stocks, not a stock market. And you can, I think it's important not to get too wrapped up in, oh, you know, the market is here and we're here in the cycle. Because bubbles spawn anti-bubbles. And so there's always something going on, especially in a bubble. There are people forget that in March of 2000, when the NASDAQ peaked at over 5,000, a lot of these old economy value stocks actually troughed at exactly the same time. So it was a mirror. These things are mirror images. And so I think we have to, you know, keep that in mind as well, not just say, well, okay, we're here in the cycle. We're going to go to 100% cash. I don't think it's that simple.
All right. Well, let's go to some of the ideas that you have, the predictions, or at least these are views that you're taking right now. The first one, the economy comes in for a hard landing. So you see, I guess this is what you've been saying. We're nowhere near that. We're going to see the bottom fall out. I mean, the tech stocks, those kinds of companies that don't have any earnings, that thrive on zero interest rates, they've already gotten clocked pretty hard. Do you think they still have further to go?
I think you just have to take it on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, if I look at a stock like maybe Microsoft or Apple, it seems to me like these stocks have further to go. You look at some of these money-losing tech stocks, you know, some of them will be able to cut their marketing expenses and their R&D expenses. And some of this is just they appear to be money-losing. But, you know, if you really look behind the accounting, the marketing expense is really acquiring customers. And if you have a software business and those customers are around for 10 or 20 years and you're running that through your income statement, then, you know, it's not giving you a real good indication of the profitability. But there are going to be, I think there's still a lot of sort of zombies out there that that need to be taken out and shot, and we're, you know, we're moving through that process, but I don't think we're there yet. And there's still pockets of extreme overvaluation. I think when you look at the passive bubble and a company like BlackRock or some of these other companies that are kind of wrapped up in ESG ratings, they still have very high multiples, like 20, 30 times earnings or more. So there are pockets out there, but at the same time, there are a lot of cheap stocks as well.
Yeah, and that's what you focus on your letter. You always have some very interesting ideas there. Active management outperforms passive management. I guess that goes along with the idea that it's a market of stocks, not a stock market.
Yeah, and I think for me, the statistic there that I like to bring out is that we've had over the past 5 years, roughly $1.5 trillion flow out of actively managed funds into passively managed funds. And of course, a lot of that money is going into the S&P 500. So that is one of my themes, is that I think that a lot of the risk right now is in the S&P 500 types of stocks. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Apple, Microsoft, still a lot of these big tech stocks seem to be, that's where the pockets of overvaluation are. And I think the opportunities are looking across the index divide, companies that are not in the S&P 500, and companies that have a higher insider ownership. So the indexes are float weighted, which means that if you have low insider ownership, you're more likely to make it into the popular indexes. So I just think that this is where people have been. Let's put it this way. Last year, the whole idea of autopilot investing, it kind of hit an iceberg. Mm-hmm. And, so it was the 60-40 portfolio did not work. The S&P 500 did not work last year. And I think that will continue. I think that the autopilot, that whole mindset that this is a simple game, it's an easy game, just put your money into an index fund or the 60-40 portfolio, I don't think that's going to work moving forward for a while.
We're going to have to work a little harder, and I'm going to have to work a little harder to cover all the topics. My engineer tells me we only have 3 minutes left here, so we got to get going. Okay. Gold regains its luster, you're suggesting. What do you see? Why gold in 2023?
Yeah, well, gold had a pretty rough 2 years. And it's interesting, August of 2020, it had a nice run, but peaked at a little over $2,000 an ounce. And at the time, year-over-year CPI was about 1%.
Right.
And then it goes to the 40-year highs over 8 or 9%, and gold goes nowhere. It actually goes down. And I think this shows just how strange markets and confounding they can be. And I feel like, wouldn't it be interesting if we see CPI numbers come down, and could come down quite dramatically in a recession, and that gold becomes a safe haven, and it could actually do just as it did not do well when the CPI went from plus 1% to plus 8%. If it were to go back down to plus 5 or plus 4, I think it could actually do well. And I think part of that has to do with the dollar as well. That's another part of the story where I just feel like the dollar has peaked, and a weak dollar is going to be gold bullish.
And with regard to the bond market, you see maybe a respite here in the short term, but likely higher interest rates, I guess, long term.
Well, yeah, definitely. I feel like the bond market, we had basically a 40-year bull market in bonds. That peaked with something like $18 trillion negatively yielding bonds around the world. We're now going into a long bear market, and bonds tend to go through these really long bull and bear markets. So I think this could be a decades long bear market. However, at least with the U.S. Treasuries, the bullish consensus got down to 21% bulls, which is the lowest it's been in a very, very long time. And so it would not surprise me that, especially if we get a deeper recession than people think, that bonds get a little bit of that safe haven status and there's a bit of a bounce back. But I think it would be a rally in a secular bear market.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it go at that. Kevin, I'm so sorry. We got to have to be back again to talk more, because there's so many things I want to hear from you. But where can people go to sign up for the Coffee Can portfolio?
go to either do a Google search on the Coffee Can Portfolio or just go to thecoffeecanportfolio.com.
All right. Excellent. All right. Very good. Thank you so much, Kevin. Sorry, we're out of time. Gotta go.
Okay.
We'll have you again sometime soon. All right. Well, next week will be the last week on the Voice America Business Channel. Michael Oliver will join me to provide his give and take on the economics and political headwinds that Americans will have to face in 2023. And the Reverend Larry Bean of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the same church body that I am a member of, will join me to share some godly light at a time when it seems America and the entire Western world is heading towards the kind of government tyranny that, well, we once thought could only take place in communist and fascist dictatorships. That may be an overstatement. I'm afraid it's not. We will look to the Reverend Bean to help us know how we can live joyful and purposeful lives when all around us seems to be heading towards darkness. So until next week, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.